There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Live sport, the latest headlines, and top debate. This is The Grill with Tom Urquhart on DubaiEye 103.8.
Good morning to, good afternoon to one and all. It's been a long morning, that's for sure. You're listening to The Grill. We're all a bit out of kilter. Why? Because we're not at Barasti. We're taking a day away while some renovations are done, broadcasting live from the studio over the next 3 hours. Worry not, though, for sports fans. Over the next 3 hours, we'll keep you up to date with all of the latest stories in the world of sport, including a mouth-watering early kickoff in the Premier League. Manchester United take on Tottenham. That one kicking off in around about 25 minutes' time. We'll have team news for you in just a few minutes. Papua New Guinea have thumped Wales in the Rugby League World Cup. We'll have all the results and look ahead to the live games ongoing at the moment. There's an early kickoff up in Scotland as well as Hearts take on Rangers up there in Scotland. We'll have the latest on that. In fact, if there's any action in any sporting arena anywhere in any corner of the globe, you got it covered here on The Grill between now and 6 o'clock. As always, if you'd like to have your say, you can do exactly that. You can text us now on 400. You can have your say online at DubaiEye1038FM or get in touch at the Twitter at DubaiEyeSport. This is The Grill with you through until 6 o'clock this evening.
Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the DubaiEye Messenger app.
Good to have you on board and good to have the Grill panel with us as well, albeit in somewhat strange surroundings this afternoon. Joined in studio by Chris McCarty and Mark Archer. Mr. McDanger, good to have you on board. We've got front row seats for Manchester United.
Perfect seats, yes. Very good afternoon, Tom. Very good afternoon to the listeners. Really looking forward to this one. It's Manchester United against Tottenham. It's second, versus third in the Premier League this afternoon. Thoroughly looking forward to it. As I say, team news is in. I'll give you that in the next couple of moments, but this really does pit two of the best teams in the Premier League, the best two teams up there anyway in British football. Two fine teams, started the season well in Europe as well, and really looking forward to it. Gets underway at 3:30, we'll have goal updates throughout.
We've also got Mr. Mark Archer over on that side of the desk this afternoon. Good to have you on board, Archie.
Afternoon, Tom, Chris and listeners. Yeah, plenty of sport happening around the world, not just the football taking place at Old Trafford this afternoon. We'll talk about all the rugby happening in the Northern Hemisphere. Limiteds over cricket, T20 International wrapped up series, that series last night down the capital in Abu Dhabi. Both teams now, Sri Lanka and Pakistan, head for that third and final T20 International in Lahore. Good to see international cricket back in Pakistan tomorrow. Major League Baseball World Series is well underway now. Game 3 was held early hours of this morning in Houston. We'll bring you bang up to date with the action in Major League Baseball's World Series. And of course, it's the WGC World Golf Championships taking place in Shishan Golf Club in Shanghai. Round 3 completed earlier today. We'll bring you bang up to date also with the golf happening over there in China.
We're going to keep an eye on all of those, but the pressing story and the pressing matter is, of course, team news for Manchester United against Tottenham. Chris McCarty has been working through the starting lineups for us. Any big surprises there?
I guess one in the shape of the away side, the opposition at Old Trafford this afternoon, Tottenham Hotspur. They've dropped Davinson Sanchez, the Colombian who came in for big money during the summer from Ajax over in Holland, has started his career at Tottenham very, very well at White Hart Lane. He has been left on the bench though, and I think that's due to the fact that Manchester United, you may recall in the Europa League final, Tom, that United actually kind of left him with possession. Jose Mourinho really targeted the Colombian, and it worked to great effect, Manchester United winning that game 2-0. So he is on the bench for Spurs. Let me just run through the home side first for you. David De Gea starts in goals for Manchester United. It's a back three: Eric Bailly, Chris Smalling and Phil Jones. Midfield four: Antonio Valencia wide right, Ashley Young will start wide left. The midfield two of Ander Herrera and Nemanja Matic, Henrik Mkhitaryan and Marcus Rashford. They'll be tasked with getting at this Spurs defence and setting up the chances for the big man Romelu Lukaku. He leads the line for United today. For Spurs, no Harry Kane, of course. Confirmation yesterday that he was to miss this afternoon's match due to that hamstring strain that he picked up against Liverpool last weekend. So they start Hugo Lloris in goals. It looks to me as if they will also match up the back three three, Toby Alderweireld, Eric Dyer and Jan Vertonghen. A midfield five, it's looking like. Serge Aurier, wide right, Ben Davies, wide left, and then I think it will be a midfield three of Christian Eriksen, Harry Winks and Moussa Sissoko. Dele Alli then supporting the lone frontman, Heung-Min Son. He's been given the nod ahead of Fernando Llorente. Kickoff, T-minus 23 minutes for this. I'm a tad excited.
Ben Davis, 100th appearance for Spurs today. Rate him?
I do, yeah. He started the season very well, has Ben Davies. I know Danny Rose has obviously had that knee injury since basically the start of the year, and he's struggled with that. He's now back to full fitness, but it's a real measure, I guess, how much Mauricio Pochettino rates the Welshman, that he's been given the nod today ahead of Danny Rose. There has been some suggestion in recent weeks that Danny Rose has been hankering for a move to Old Trafford. He is a Leeds boy, brought up in the northern parts of England as Danny Rose, and there has been speculation now for the past few months that he is very keen on a move to Manchester United. So no real surprise to see him left on the bench, but yeah, big fan of Ben Davies. He started the season very well, solid defensively, but I think it's been more what he's done in the attacking third at the start of the season that has really stood out for me.
So just a quick reminder of what McCarty was saying there. Mata, Lingard, Martial out, Bailey, McEachran and Rashford in. It's just, I mean, I was one of the great critics of Anthony Martial last season, the last couple of seasons, in fact, but he seems to have come into his own under Jose Mourinho. However, it seems to be every time he starts a game, he's below the pace. He's one of those super subs, isn't he?
He is one of those guys, I think, when you need to rely on the players. I think if Jose was asked, and today's a big test for Manchester United, coming off the back of defeat to Huddersfield last weekend, I think the biggest issue with Anthony Martial, he's infuriating to watch because on one hand, he can be almost unplayable. On the other hand, very, very inconsistent. And I think for a big game like today, Jose's gone for Marcus. He feels that Marcus is someone who, you know, will raise his performance and produce a performance for him. And I don't quite think Anthony Martial, despite the fact I have seen improvement in him this season, I don't think Jose Mourinho quite trusts him just yet in the big games where it really matters, where you need a performance both in possession and out of possession. And unfortunately, Anthony Martial has to make do with a place on the bench.
Been a few issues at the back for Manchester United. Injuries to the defensive line, but good to see the likes of Eric Bailly coming back into the starting lineup, Mark Archer.
Yeah, it is. He's been one of the sort of solid figures, good signing for the Red Devils in the last couple of years. It's such a crossroads match for both teams, though. Second versus third. United, pragmatic start to season. They've got results, but that a massive loss for them last week against Huddersfield. They looked as though they showed up and expected to win without putting any effort in, and Huddersfield, all credit to them, came away with the 3 points, and that really would have given, you know, shockwaves across Manchester United after sort of getting wrong. Big match for both teams, really. And Harry Kane, massive blow for Spurs not being available. That hamstring injury he picked up. And big question marks whether he'll be fit for Real Madrid during the week as well in Champions League. Two massive matches for Spurs, who, you know, you look at Spurs over the last couple of years, and I'm yet to be convinced, but they're just turning in performance after performance. And for me now, they are definitely the best team in North London. I think if we discuss that, they've jumped ahead of Arsenal, really, as the dominant team in North London. As the dominant team in London, well, let's see what happens with Chelsea. But Chelsea fans would have another say to that. But interesting afternoon. I think looking at the match before the Harry Kane injury, I just thought on current form, Spurs has had enough to get past United. But they have United have a wonderful home record under Jose Mourinho. I think it's like almost 38-40 matches since they've last been defeated there. For me, I think both teams might cancel each other out. It's one of those games that's either going to be 0-0, 1-1, or stupidly high scoring, covering lots of odds there.
I think a draw is the result that looks most likely, certainly on paper. And you're right to point out, Arch, a bit of pressure on both teams, it's got to be said. Manchester United looking to bounce back from the defeat to Huddersfield, as I said, last weekend. Spurs, on the other hand, although they play excellent football and they totally dismantled Liverpool last weekend, they've not got a happy record away from home in the big games. I think they've only won once under Mauricio Pochettino, so they need to get past that hoodoo if they are to go on and make a serious title challenge this season. So for Spurs, expectation there, despite the fact they're without their talisman in Harry Kane, they've still got a wonderful squad, and they'll be looking for a result today. If you ask me, I think we're heading for a score draw today.
The worrying thing about for both teams and both managers going into this match is whoever loses could go 8 points behind Man City at the top of the table there, and that's a big gap to try and catch up. Even as early in the season, lots of football to play, but 8 point gap is 3 wins that you have to find, and City have to lose to catch up in that difference. And the rest of the Premier League, be warned, because City are looking so good at this early stage of the season.
And that's the scary thing. Even if these two teams do draw today and City go on and beat, I think it's West Brom, it is West Brom later this afternoon, then all of a sudden that lead becomes 7 points. And, you know, even at this early stage, just the way City are going about their business, that is, I wouldn't say insurmountable, but it's a huge gap at this early stage of the season. And you look at the fixtures right now, And you don't see many where Manchester City are going to lose, certainly. You don't see many that they're actually going to drop any points. There was a real test at Stamford Bridge for them a few weeks ago. They came through that with flying colours. And I think the team that finishes above Manchester City will be champions. Unfortunately, I don't think any side will finish above City, are the favourites. This, though, today, as Archie rightly points out, one of these teams, United or Tottenham, both teams, they need to go for the win. We know Jose's pragmatic, but even he would acknowledge 3 points is absolutely vital this afternoon.
Let us have a look at, well, get the thoughts of the two respective managers now. Let's start with Mauricio Pochettino. As he gets ready to take his boys up to Old Trafford. Players are out on the pitch, warming up at the moment. And as he's been saying, he needs to continue the good form.
Always you want to have all the players available. That always is a problem. Play more or play less, because the most important is all available and fit for play. But like always, we believe in the collective, in the squad, and during the season, sometimes some problem happen and will happen, and always you must trust in all the player and all the squad.
Let's hear from Jose Mourinho now, the home manager. He believes that extra day of preparation won't count for anything this afternoon.
I hope every time we have one day less than the opponents, we do the same question. But honestly, I don't think it makes an impact, because my feeling is that the majority of the players that played that match are not going to play tomorrow. So I don't think it has a real impact. Dele Alli played, but he didn't play. He didn't play with suspension against Real Madrid, and you know, I don't think it's a problem for them. And to be honest, I think they are a young, strong team, also physically. So I think they will be what they are, a very good team.
Jose, succinct and to the point as ever. Good to hear from the Manchester United manager there. We'll work through all the other big games in the Premier League for you a little later on in the show. Just want to make quick mention as well of big day for English youth football. The Under-17 World Cup final takes place a little later on. England against Spain.
Yes, they've done very well. A 3-1 win over Brazil in the semi-finals. This coming off the back, of course, of their Under-20 side winning. And I don't like often talking about England doing well in football, because we never hear the end of it as Scots, but you can't take anything away from England. They were fantastic in winning the Under-20 World Cup, and I've seen bits and pieces of them in this Under-17 tournament. Of course, they've got little Angel Gomez. He's making them tick in the middle of the park. Phil Foden as well, young boy from Manchester City, who I know that Pep Guardiola has high hopes for. So this is a fine England team, and I would probably make them favourites going into this one a little later
it's
today.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you know, we're often bemoaning the lack of talent in English football at the moment. Obviously, the Premier League attracting some of the best players from all over the globe, and we bemoan the level of the England national team, at the first team, that is. Under 17s into the final today. Under 19s won the European Championship earlier this year. Under 20s won the World Cup earlier on this year. So there's obviously talent coming through the ranks.
The problem, Tom, and again, it's probably not the only problem. We could probably spend a whole show talking about what needs to be done for youth football in Britain, not just in England, in Britain across the board. But no question, success is brilliant. The key now, though, is to keep these young boys' feet on the ground. Yeah. We've seen with the money that's in the Premier League, an awful lot of clubs already were saying Ryan Brewster, a young boy, 17 years of age, he's the top goal scorer playing for Liverpool Football Club. A lot of interest now surrounding him, 7 goals in the tournament, and already we're talking about big money contracts. He's 17, and that is the key to all of this, that more needs to be done to regulate, I feel, young boys. And okay, it's fair that they should be able to earn what they can or what their agents can, but keeping these boys' feet on the ground is vital, because we've seen it so often for an awful lot of them. They'll be given riches now, riches early, and it's very, very difficult to stay on the straight and narrow from there.
The other thing that you got to point to is the opportunities playing first-team football, particularly in the Premier League. I mean, without looking at the lineups today for Tottenham, Tottenham versus Manchester United. There's probably a handful of English players playing for both teams in this match. And, you know, the guys have got to go and get football, first-team football. And if most of these players, the under-17s, will be at big clubs, will be contracted to Premier League clubs. But the fact of the reality is they're not going to get football regularly at a competitive level. They'll play under-17 and reserves and youth football. But, you know, in so many other countries, if you're old enough, you're good enough, you'll get through and get an opportunity. But there's so many big-name international stars in the Premier League. It's just giving guys a chance to get first-team football. They've got to go out on loan. They've got to go to other clubs. And that's a massive gap between age group football and first-team club football.
Well, we see, and you're right to point out, 7 of the 22 that have taken to the field in this early kickoff, Manchester United versus Spurs, are English. Davies in there, that's 8 from Britain. You've got Harry Winks, young boy, been given his chance by Mauricio Pochettino. Marcus Rashford, we know, young, prodigiously talented young boy, given his chance by Jose Mourinho. Throw Dele Alli into the mix, he's still only 21. So youth has been given a chance, especially at Spurs, more certainly than Manchester United, that's for sure. But, you know, if you're good enough, you're old enough. And unfortunately, though, for a lot of these boys, Arch is right to point out, you know, the Ryan Brewsters of this world, 7 goals. He's still, you know, still learning, still developing. It'll be very difficult for him to break through that Liverpool's team, because you've got Firmino ahead of you, Daniel Sturridge ahead of you, and Liverpool, the pressure is on Jurgen Klopp to win titles and to reach Champions League latter stages, to finish in the top four. You've got to be a brave manager, and I've got to say Mauricio Pochettino has been over recent years, and to blood these youngsters, because there is so much pressure not only on the manager's shoulders, but there'll be huge pressure on these young shoulders as well.
And they are becoming a commodity as well, aren't they? I mean, we're seeing big prices being played for English players going to some of the big spending clubs at the moment. The critics out there don't actually need to be critics. I mean, it makes sense that because of the quota system, you need to have X amount of English players on the books. So gone are the days where you had a couple of foreign imports and you were trying to balance the books there. It's more now about making sure that you've got young talent coming through the ranks to tick the boxes for English football.
And that's the danger. It's stockpiling, isn't it? Yeah. It's all about just ticking boxes and you know, not giving them a chance. And that's why there's a premium on British players. You pay over the odds on British talent. Some of the fees, I mean, Michael Keane, great example, 30 million that he cost Everton from Burnley Football Club, and yet you're seeing better centre-halves, let us be honest, you're seeing better centre-halves changing hands, whether it be from Italian football to Spanish football, in the case of Matteo Musicchio, who left Villarreal to sign for AC Milan. For me, I think he's a better defender than Michael Keane, and yet he's going for a fraction of the price, and the reason for that being, as you rightly say, you've got to hit your quota. So there's a lot wrong, there's an awful lot right with the Premier League, no question about that, given that it is probably the biggest and you know, best, you can make that argument, league in the world, but there's an awful lot wrong with it as well. And you know, it's a beast. We've talked about it numerous times. Where does it all end? Where does the money end, and where does this oversaturation of just poor talent? I think there's an awful lot of poor talent in the British game at this moment in time. Where does it all end?
Send us your thoughts, please. Text them to us now on 4001. Equally, you can tweet us at Dubai Eye Sport or at Dubai Eye 1038 FM. Tom, Chris, Mark in studio today. It doesn't mean that Barasti ain't doing business. They're doing roaring business, probably doing better business today, but it's just we're not down there today because of a few technical upgrades that were going underway, which will see us back there next weekend, I think, from new times. Will it be next week with the clocks changing?
It will be, yeah. Yes, you're right.
Clocks change this weekend,
yeah.
I believe.
So. No, is it not? Yeah, you're right, this weekend, so it will be. Yeah, so 4-7 next Saturday.
4-7 next Saturday to take in the build-up to the Premier League. So an extra hour to be added on. We'll bring you all the details on that one throughout the week right here on Dubai Eye 103.8. Taking a short break, coming back with more sport.
The Grill has all the sport you need right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Thoughts coming through on the text message system. Keep coming. 4001. In terms of United playing at the moment, I'd say it's a blip in terms of their attitude. This one's from Denny, who's just texted in on 4001. They're saying United are not performing well, and I've watched them a lot this season. They appear to be doing enough, and that is it. Is those the thoughts of two Manchester United fans? Let's find out. They're both in studio with me this afternoon, Chris McCarty and Mark Archer. Dip in form so far for United?
I mean, it's not been pretty since the international break. The 0-0 draw over at Anfield was painful, in all honesty, to watch. The same for their very lucky, fortunate victory over in Portugal against Benfica. Again, not pretty to watch. And a bit of a wake-up call last weekend against Huddersfield. Okay, they dominated possession. I think they had nearly 80% possession over the piece. But then, yet, they only had three shots on target. Huddersfield took advantage of a couple of silly individual mistakes. Juan Mata and Victor Lindelof, those culpable of those mistakes. But they took advantage. They were disciplined. They were organised defensively. United not moving the ball quickly enough for my liking. No real... I think it's cohesion is what I would say has been lacking. They're not a Liverpool, they're not a Spurs, they're not a Man City or United. They far more rely on your Lukaku's and your Rashford's to produce a little bit of moment of magic, and this is a real big test for them today. This is, you know, the biggest test for them of the season thus far. Some would say it was at Anfield against Liverpool. I think it's today against a very, very good Spurs team.
Archie?
Yeah, it's typical Mourinho. It's pragmatic. He's results-driven, and he's got results, but they haven't played that well. I mean, they've missed, I think, Paul Pogba in the middle of the park. He's that big, dominating central midfielder who scores the odd goal for them. He breaks up play. He can stand at the back and be strong. And they miss that domination factor. He allows other players to go off and be a bit more mobile, show a bit more pace and get down the flank. So I think they miss Pogba, but that's not an excuse, because they should have a big enough squad to cover for all eventualities. Look, it's fun. They've had a funny sort of season, because they've had to grind away games against teams that they should be expected to beat easily. Yet after and then they've scored a lot of late goals. They've won some games 3-0, 4-0 after sort of being 1-0 up with 15 minutes to go, 10 minutes to go. Then they've cashed in as they've done the hard work. But, you know, their goal difference, just looking at the goal difference, City have been phenomenal, scoring goals, winning matches. Their goal difference is plus 28 at this stage. United is the second best in the Premier League at plus 18. So they have scored goals. They have had wins, but I think those wins flatter to deceive a bit. But at the same time, they're second in the Premier League. They're still ahead of Spurs on points difference, but just both teams need to find something extra, I think, to put some pressure on Man City. And today's a big sort of watershed game for both these teams at crossroads. Who can take that next step forward to really come out of the pack now to challenge Man City, put some pressure on Man City?
Let's hear some more thoughts from Jose Mourinho. He's been talking midweek about the opposition today, selecting a couple of the players that he sees as potential risks for his team, but also heaping praise upon his own as well. Just as pictures, what's that all about? They've got different names on their backs.
I'm just noticing that as well. Yeah, Mkhitaryan, I think it's got Emma 22 on the back. I think it must be their... double check and find out now, but they have stripped off, they're back into their normal strips now, but there's various names. Arch,
I think what they, each of the players have a mascot with them, different kids, and I think it's the name of the children.
Yes.
And now they're swapping, taking their shirts off, and I think they're going to present them to the kids, and they've got their proper
lovely
names
touch
on here. So lovely touch. Yeah, so each player in the Manchester United team has a child with them, a mascot, and they've just taken off their shirts with the child's name on. They gifted them to the children, who now look as though they don't know what to do. They're on the middle of the field. Someone's ushered them off the field, because now Manchester United have taken their place for this kickoff against
It would have made
Spurs.
Life very difficult for the commentator if he carried on.
We get him playing with Emma on his back.
Emma 22, like did, Eric Bailly had Jingy
Junior or something like that on his back. Anyway, let's get back to the thoughts of Jose Mourinho, the Manchester United manager. Been talking about the opposition, but also his team, the lead up to this game.
To fulfill and the player that you brought in?
I have the player that I want to have. Probably I have the player that I didn't think it was possible to have. But in the end, we got the player that I really wanted. Jones is good. He was on the bench Tuesday. No need to play, but he was ready. So he is really ready. Eric, let's see, one more training session, but he's the only one that I hope from the injured group that can be ready for tomorrow.
And he is ready for tomorrow. He's on the pitch at the moment, about to kick off as well. One man coming back from injury is Zlatan Ibrahimovic. We're told, what, by the end of the year or
by
not?
By the end of the year, yeah. The initial prognosis was we wouldn't see him in probably until February, but the man is part man, part machine, I think, because he's made a remarkable recovery from that serious knee injury, and it is now expected that he will take to the field before the end of 2017.
That's going to be interesting. I mean, it can only be a bonus for Manchester United to have him, especially if they're still competing in all tournaments.
Yes, exactly that. I don't see him playing alongside Romelu Lukaku. No. Just not for me. I think what Ibrahimovic will bring is that experience. He had a wonderful season. I mean, he's had a wonderful career in truth, but a great first season in English football. And what he will do is he'll take that pressure off of Romelu Lukaku's shoulders as we head down the finishing straight and into the back end of the season with Champions League games, with FA Cup games, League Cup games, if United are still there as well. The games come thick and fast, so another fantastic option for Manchester United. And Zlatan, he's got that X factor that if they get into the knockout stages of the Champions League, he could very well become a massive match winner for them.
He's got a winning attitude, isn't he? He expects to win, he expects to score goals. That can only rub off on your teammates. And he gives Mourinho a different style of playing. He can go very direct. He's a big, tall, physical guy, wins most of the balls in the air. And you can think that on some games, you can see him trying to play with Lukaku in some systems against some matchups, and then you see him being, you know, influential off the bench at times as well. But he'll give Lukaku's played a lot of football this year for United. He's pretty much started in every game. He's going to have to be rested at some stage, and so Ibrahimovic bringing a world-class player, it's like a new signing during that winter, that January transfer break. He's going to be an influential figure for United.
Minute silence at Old Trafford. I have no idea why. We will find that one out for you. What I can tell you, though, it's not the only early kickoff in the world of football. We've got an early kickoff up in Scotland. We've got an early kickoff in the Championship. We'll have team news for you on both of those. And we're underway, half an hour underway, over in Spain. Alaves taking on Valencia there. 29 minutes gone. No goals in that one. One result to bring you from a little earlier on. Wellington Phoenix drew with the Brisbane Roar. 3-3.
There you go.
6-goal thriller.
A-League. Yeah, it's a growing league, in fairness. The A-League, I know there's a huge following for football, for soccer down in Australia now, and the A-League is growing all of the time. Ross McCormack, former Aston Villa, Fulham striker, I know he's now down there playing for Melbourne as well.
Really?
So, yeah, there's a few players now making their way down under. Great location, great place to live.
See, I was going to talk about the away games to Wellington, and that, you know, might be a bit of a trek to do the away game and the home game, but then I suppose, you know, Perth to Sydney is probably further, isn't it?
It is. You're exactly right. It's further to travel from Perth to Sydney and or Brisbane or Melbourne than it is from, say, Sydney, Melbourne or Brisbane to across to Wellington or across to Auckland. So, I mean, look, these teams are used to it. You look at the leagues now down in Australasia. You have the super rugby, so teams are backwards and forwards every week. Then you throw in South Africa and Argentina and Japan into that mix. So I think travel for all those teams now is part and parcel. And same with the New Zealand basketball team, the Breakers, they also play in the Australian competition. So I guess it's just a sign of the times, Tom.
Sign of the times, and the time is just after 5:30. Time for us to take a short break. We're underway at Old Trafford after that minute of silence. We'll bring you details of this game throughout its entirety. If you'd like to have your say, then please do get in touch with us on 4001. This is The Grill with you through till 6 o'clock.
The Grill has all the sport you need right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Went to the break there talking about Zlatan Ibrahimovic and his likely return to action pretty soon for Manchester United. Adding to the ranks there, let's just get some more details on that.
When you came back, I loved. I have to say, when you signed and you said, I came to finish what I started, I had to love you. You always used to make me love anyway, anyhow. And I loved. And I was like, what does he mean? Because I know you, sometimes you say stuff and you actually mean it. Sometimes you say stuff and you actually play, but there is a bit of meaning in it. And sometimes, you know, so what did you mean?
No, I say I come back to finish what I started. Everything I build up from the first season, because obviously we won the 3 trophies. The ending for me was not the ending I wanted, or nobody wanted, especially after how the season went and everything. And the target is the Premier League. And that is my target to finish. So everything that I started from the first season, we will finish it in the second one.
You know what? I know I shouldn't say things like this, but he's so cool, Zlatan.
Oh, yes. Yeah, all the kids look up to Zlatan. He's got an arrogant streak about him. I think he plays up to the cameras. I think he plays up social media and stuff. But he's an absolute hero in Sweden. I've had the pleasure of heading over there. He is bigger than Santa Claus over in Sweden, because he really is. He is incredible what he's done in his footballing career. He's won titles wherever he's gone. He's grown into himself as well. He had issues certainly in his younger days, and there's a wonderful documentary
which is well
documented his problems, you know, his parents, etc. He was petulant. He's matured greatly. He's never one to back down, and you know, he's just been an unbelievable player throughout his career, and he's now proving that in Manchester United. He's a real character, and a lot of kids look up to him because, you know, he lives right, he looks after himself, and you know, he makes sure that come a Saturday afternoon, he's always at peak performance, and he's always producing the goods.
You're listening to The Grill. We're broadcasting live from the studio this afternoon, but we will be back at Barasti new times next week from 4 until 7. We mentioned that there are several games underway at the moment. All the games over in the United Kingdom. Manchester United against Tottenham Hotspur, Hearts against Rangers, and Wednesday against Barnsley. All no goals in that one, just kicking off in the last 5 minutes. However, there has been a goal down in Spain. Chris McCarty's got the details for that for us.
It's second versus 19th. Valencia in second under Marcelinho, unbeaten this season, looking to close the gap on league leaders Barcelona. And I can tell you they have taken the lead in this opening half. It is Alaves 0, Valencia 1. It is Simone Zaza, the Italian striker, had a real poor spell at West Ham, you may recall, Tom. Mm. Didn't score many goals in England, but he's found his goal-scoring touch over in Spain. And it's he that has scored the opening goal. It's Alaves 0, Valencia 1. Valencia, if that result holds, they will close the gap to Barcelona to just a point at the top of La Liga.
Barcelona in action a little later on, 10:45 this evening. They're away at Athletic Bilbao. Sevilla take on Leganes. That one's not till much later. That's where, 12:30 this evening. And before all that, Atletico Madrid taking on Villarreal at 8:30 this evening. They do like to spread games out over in Spain, don't they?
Oh, yes, they do indeed. They're looking to try and obviously maximise their potential, their earning potential over in Asia, certainly, and yeah, they're going toe-to-toe with the Premier League. Just looking at all of the kick-off times in La Liga over the course of this weekend, there are only two matches that start at the same time, so they stagger them all out so that essentially if you're a lover of Spanish football, you could in theory watch every single game.
Just want to turn our attention to Scotland if we can. I had a fun evening on Thursday night. I know that you had Harry in studio last week. I did an event with him on Thursday night, so the swing against cancer thing from Reza, which was the Mike Clark Golf Day up at Jumeirah Golf Estates, which was a great success, and well done to all those that took part in it. Harry Redknapp up on stage and just playing up to the crowd, because obviously all he got asked about was what next, Harry, where are you going, blah, blah. Rangers. He said it's all done deal, Rangers, it's been sorted, the lads on the table, they've spoken to the board, we're done, I'm on a plane tomorrow, so yeah, it's all done. Apparently that's going to be the next stop for him.
He would take that job in a heartbeat, he said so himself on the show as well. And yeah, Pedro Chiquinha gone, strange appointment 7 months ago. He has lasted just 7 months. He has presided, he's overseen the biggest ever defeat to Celtic at Ibrox in Rangers' illustrious history. It was a disaster from minute one, really, Pedro Chiquinha. You know, Harry, stranger things have happened in the world of football.
Surely not. It's too far away from the south coast for him, isn't it?
I don't think so. I think Rangers will they've got to get it right. Derek McInnes, the Aberdeen boss, he is heavily touted, former Rangers player, spent 5 years at the football club. He's been linked with it, done a wonderful job with Aberdeen over the course of the past four seasons. So he could be in it, and I think it makes sense. I was calling for him to get the job before Pedro, and let's wait and see. But yeah, Harry, if the phone call comes, I'm sure Harry would be up there in a flash.
What's happening with the Scottish job as well? Looking for a manager, aren't they?
Looking for a manager in the Scotland national team. Yeah, Gordon Strachan, a mutual parting of ways, although it does appear that he was pushed from that job, and Scotland will take their time to look for a new manager. David Moyes has been mentioned, but I'm now sure he'll be taking a keen interest in the Everton job now. I think he would quite love the opportunity to go back to Goodison Park, as I'm sure there'll be a lot of managers that are excited about that particular job. But yeah, it looks as if for the Rangers job, my money would be on Derek McInnes.
Just to bring you up to date with what's happening in the Rugby League World Cup, it kicked off yesterday. England going down to Australia after taking an early lead in that one. Australia coming back, just proving too dominant. They beat England by 18 points to 4. Today we've got three results to bring you from a little earlier on in the Rugby League World Cup, which is taking place down in Australia and New Zealand. Papua New Guinea absolutely thumped Wales by 50 points to 6. New Zealand beat Samoa 38 points to 8. And Fiji were victorious against the United States of America. In fact, Fiji were very impressive. Watched the first half of that one, and they looked very good indeed. Fiji beating the USA by 58 points to 12. Good news for England's World Cup hopes. They've been boosted by the news that Sam Burgess, who limped off yesterday in their defeat against Australia, is going to return earlier than anticipated from a knee injury. So we'll be back into the mix for England. But I think, Arch, that loss yesterday basically means that, according to the form book, England will meet New Zealand in the semi-final, which ain't good. For England fans, that is.
It's a funny old competition, isn't it, the Rugby League World Cup, because you've got three teams who are going to be vying to probably win it, three teams who you think exceptional, unless an exceptional result happens, are going to be in the final. It's either going to be England, it's either going to be Australia, who are the favourites going into that event, or the Kiwis, the New Zealand side. So it's a funny old event when you've got all those teams from the Pacific nations and you've got USA. I don't even think there's not a domestic competition of rugby league in the USA. So they have to find players from all over the world. So it's interesting, but it probably gets really exciting about semi-final stage.
What is the history with the rugby league in New Zealand? We don't often talk about it. Obviously, the All Blacks and Union are the
Warriors. Look, you know, for many years we've been very keen followers. Obviously, the All Blacks are a very important part of our culture, but rugby league is a very popular game. For many years, particularly a lot of the best New Zealand players all played in the NRL, and then as of the last two decades, we've had the Auckland Warriors, now the New Zealand Warriors, as a team take part. They've flattered to deceive. They've underachieved in their time in there, but it's a very, very popular game. I guess it's fair to say it's a bit like England in some ways, that it's very popular in certain parts, yeah, particularly in the north. And in New Zealand, it's a very strong game in particular regional places as well. But no, it's a very popular team. They don't come together. International Rugby League struggles a bit to capture the imagination when you've got Super League in the UK and you've got the NRL and the Grand Final and State of Origin. International Rugby League probably becomes below the NRL, below the Super League, and below State of Origin in terms of priority. So the players earn their money playing their club footy as opposed to playing International Rugby League.
Just looking at some of the fixtures there for this one, I mean, talking about the expanding influence of rugby league around the world, I mean, obviously big advocates of it down in the South Pacific, and we've seen that, and they always come strong, but good to see Wales in there with a team. Ireland have got a team this year, Italy, and tomorrow sees France take on Lebanon in Rugby League World Cup. So Lebanon having put out their team, and Scotland and take on Tonga as well. So good to see the Scots in.
Yeah, again, it's similar. Rugby League just does not get column inches in Scotland.
Doesn't. But I wonder whether it's good or bad for the game when you've got all three home nations posting teams again, because we've seen, yeah, the domination of the Southern Hemisphere teams. New Zealand, Australia, traditionally the powerhouses of Rugby League. If it were a Great Britain team like it used to be back in the day,
I agree.
There you go, a three-team World Cup. You need to have Wales and Scotland and Ireland there just to make up the numbers of teams. And
not now, if you've got Lebanon and Ireland there.
Well, it's great to see Lebanon. Interesting story. They do have a couple of Lebanese-based players in that team I was reading about during the week, but there's a massive Lebanese population in Sydney, and actually they play for most of them come in the Bankstown area, where Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs are one of the strong teams in Sydney and in the NRL. So they have players who don't get picked for Australia that have Lebanese heritage, and they'll actually come out of the NRL, and they'll actually be a pretty strong side. And a lot of the players who don't get picked up by their national teams then go and play for their countries. I guess the one thing about rugby league, it has suffered a lot in the last couple of decades with professionalism and rugby union. A lot of the best rugby union players, I know you were with one of these guys, a good example last night, Tom, is Jonathan Davis. Yeah, he played for the Bulldogs, but he was a rugby union star for Wales, and then he went and played rugby league for St Helens, was it? St Helens or Wigan?
Witness.
He turned back in the day when it was you made your money playing rugby league up in the north of England. And then he came back to Union right at the end of his career, I think. So, you know, Apollo Perolini, good friend of the show, played rugby growing up and then turned professional, went to Widnes, as well, or St Helens. He was St Helens, yeah. So that was
Henry Paul,
but lots of players used to swap codes and play, follow the money with it when the money was in rugby league.
I was watching that the Fiji game a little earlier on today, and Jared Haynes playing for Fiji in this Rugby Sevens World Cup, Rugby League World Cup. He played for Australia in the sevens last year at the Olympics.
He did. He tried to make the sevens team, but he of course went and had a season playing in NFL for the San Francisco 49ers.
That's right, yeah, of course.
The Hayne Plain, didn't he? So he was a star in NRL rugby league. Wanted to give something else a go. He went over and trialed as a free agent for in the NFL in the US. Picked up for one season, and he's been back, I think, for the Gold Coast Titans, if I'm correct. But now he's obviously starring for Fiji in the Rugby League World Cup.
You're listening to The Grill. We're broadcasting live on Dubai I-103.8. We're going to go down to Abu Dhabi in just a few minutes' time and catch up with all the latest from the Fatima bint Mubarak Ladies Open, which is ongoing in the nation's capital. We're going to be talking to one of the players taking part this year and getting an update on the leaderboard down there. So stay tuned. You're listening to Dubai I-103.8.
This is The Grill, bringing you the biggest sports stories right now on Dubai I-103.8.
All right, you two, laughing at me over there on the other side. I thought it was this weekend.
Fatima bint Mubarak Ladies Open begins at this coming Wednesday, Tom. You're getting confused, I think, with the Rat Golf Challenge. That is ongoing.
There is
Robbie Greenfield down there. He is at the prize giving. We will be hearing from him a little later in the show this afternoon, because that has come to a conclusion this afternoon. But the Fatima bint Mubarak Ladies Open, the second staging of the event down there at Sariat Beach Golf Club, it all gets underway on Wednesday. Top women in the world will be here. It's a great event. Fantastic is, well, we always see the Abu Dhabi Sports Council whenever they put on a golf event. They always do it proper. The village is always fantastic. Free entry as well from Wednesday through to Saturday. I know you're going to be playing in the Pro-Am, are you, Archie, on Tuesday?
Looking forward to it, yeah. Dust off the golf clubs. It's been a while, but yeah, Pro-Am, of course, on Tuesday. Get a chance to get up close and personal with the players and check out the formers. And then it all happens down there at the beautiful Sadiat Beach Golf Club starting Wednesday through to Saturday. Second staging of the Fatima bint Mubarak Ladies Open, and looking forward to it. And as you said, Chris, it's going to be a family event. It's a community event. There's lots to do in the village. Lots of activities, very interactive. So if you're looking for something to do next weekend, get on down to Sadiat Beach Golf Club. Take on, go and watch these lady professionals, but also just go and have some good fun in the villages. There's golf lessons, there's all sorts of things happening. So it's a good place to spend the weekend. Beautiful part of the UAE down there at the Sadiat Beach Golf Club.
One person who will be playing the entire tournament, not just the Pro-Am like you, Archie, is a returning to the nation's capital Spanish professional golfer, Belén Mosso, who, as an amateur, won the British Ladies Amateur Golf Championship back in 2006, has been achieving high standards on the LPGA Tour over the last couple of seasons. She joins us live on the line now. Belén, thanks so much indeed for taking time to speak to us here on The Grill. Looking forward to the second edition of the Fatima bint Mubarak.
Hi, how are you guys? Thank you so much for having me. Yes, of course, I am super excited to be back here.
What sets this tournament apart from others for you on the tour?
Well, first of all, the destination. I mean, it doesn't get much better than this. I always manage to make some time to do a little bit of tourism, and last year I just had an amazing time. Amazing time. I got to know all the corners of Abu Dhabi and learn as much of their culture as I could, and I just find it fascinating. And we don't. I mean, we get to go to many beautiful places, but this is like top notch.
It's down there at Sadiat Beach Golf Club. How does that rate with other courses that you play throughout the year?
Well, Sadiat Golf Course is super, super good. I mean, it's hard to believe it's a desert golf course, right? It's in pristine conditions, and just the weather. I mean, it was hot, but it's not too hot, and it was just really nice.
Belén, talk to us as well about the ladies' game at this moment in time. It's growing. We know that. There's been huge success in recent years to be proud of. We've seen as well that the emergence of a lot of talent from Asia, certainly from South Korea, a lot of fantastic players coming through. Overall, you feel the ladies' game is moving in the right direction?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think everyone is putting a lot of effort in, you know, growing the game, especially for women, and it is happening, really. There's the level of golf, especially on the LPGA, which is the tour that I normally play at. It's growing every year. I mean, outstanding. There's some young players that just come out there and just play fantastic golf, and it's just great that, you know, we get to play in courses in places like here, right, that we aim to keep growing the game, and hopefully we can have more Emirati women join the tour. That will be fantastic.
Belén, how's your form at the moment? Are you looking forward to obviously this weekend? And how has 27 treated you on the golf course?
Good. I mean, you mean my form golf-wise?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, no, I feel really good. I mean, I'm coming from a good momentum. I finished fifth and sixth in my last two events. So, I mean, granted, I had a little bit of a couple weeks off, but I feel that my game is it's really good right at the moment, and I just hopefully I can continue the mojo.
I want to ask, if I can, there's been some talk about the President's Cup. We saw another whitewash for the Americans against the rest of the world. Ideas put forward about how to improve that. One idea that has been put out there is to incorporate the ladies into that. Is that something that you would support? Do you ladies, would you love the chance to get more involved with the guys on the golf course and obviously trying to push the women's game that way?
Yeah, I think that would be a great idea. And you know why I think so? Because every time we play in our pro-ams, right, we play with amateurs, they always stress how much better it's played with women versus men, because their game could relate better with our game than men's, right? The men is just out of this league, right, for us to achieve. I mean, we can score-wise the same, but the type of shots they hit and the swing speed they do, it's obviously we can't do that, but so all the amateurs always relate their game more towards us. It will be super fun for the fans to watch how we can play alongside men and women, and we can probably score similarly depending on the team boxes we play, but I think it will be really interactive and really good, and maybe we can have more women, you know, get attracted to the game of golf.
Belen, a great destination down there in Abu Dhabi for golf, a couple of magnificent golf courses. We see the Abu Dhabi HSBC Golf Championship in January. A lot of the top male players around the world come to the capital of the UAE to take part in that. The Fatima bin Mubarak Ladies Open at Sadiat Beach Golf Club is a beautiful destination there. Have you had a chance to have a look around Abu Dhabi, to do see any of the attractions or get into the desert?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, last year I managed to do desert safari. I went to the mosque. I went to all the places, all the corners you can imagine. And then this year, I'm going to manage to do even more. I'm going to try and go to the places that I couldn't do last week, because that's what I like to do when I go to destinations like this. But yeah, of course, as soon as the tournament starts, starting Monday, I'm going to obviously narrow down my extra activities just to focus on the tournament.
Yeah, and you've been in Liwa Desert, I believe, this afternoon as well, riding some camels.
Yes. That's my weakness. Camels are my weakness.
Listen, Belen, we'll let you get on, but thank you very much indeed for your time this afternoon. All the best in the tournament this week, and enjoy your time down in Abu Dhabi.
Thank you.
A big thanks to Belen Mossod there, joining us live on the line from Abu Dhabi. And if you'd like to get involved, you can go along, can't you?
Entry is free. And again, it's a great family event. It's a community event there at Sadiat Beach Golf Club. Beautiful part of the UAE, and it's a wonderful place there on Sadiat Island, and close to the St. Regis Hotel is a great beach. If you're looking for something to do next weekend, starting Wednesday through to Saturday, head on down to the nation's capital, Sadiat Beach Golf Club, for the Fatima bin Mubarak Ladies Open. Plenty to do for the family, plenty to do if you're an adult, but also plenty to do for the kids as well.
Leading players in the women's tour also down there. Cheyenne Woods, she back again this year?
She is, yeah. Cheyenne's over, the niece of the legendary Tiger Woods. She's here, the defending champion Beth Allen. She will also be over at Georgia Hall, who I think's got a huge future in the game. She's a fantastic player. She was the runner-up last year, recent Solheim Cup team member as well. Really, really bright future she has got. Katrina Matthew as well, one of my compatriots. She will also be in attendance, as will, I am reliably informed, Emma Dodds. No, she will not be playing, but she is heading on over to do a little bit of ceremony work, etc.
That's so what she's been doing,
Dodds,
is it?
She's
working on handicap.
On her handicap. She does post quite a lot on social media, does Emma, and she has been dusting out the old golf clubs. I'm just not quite sure she's up to the standard to take on the world's best. But it is a great event. We were there last year. It is a three-day tournament. It kicks all off, or it tees off, should I say, on Wednesday. Thoroughly looking forward to it. We will be down there at some juncture as well, catching up with Emma, catching up with the girls, speaking to some of the key protagonists as well. And looking forward to the Fatima bint Mubarak Ladies Open. Let us not forget as well, the first professional professional ladies event down there in the capital.
Sanderson Farms Championship, HSBC Champions, and of course the Seam Derby LPGA over in Malaysia at the moment. Mark Karch has got some of the leaderboards for us.
Yeah, of course, it's a big event in the world of golf. Actually, it's the WGC, the World Golf Championship, taking place down at Shishan Golf Club in Shanghai in China. It's the HSBC Champions. Many of the best players in the world flock to this, and I can tell you round three leaderboard was completed earlier today. Star-studded leaderboard as well. In first position is Dustin Johnson. He has a six-shot lead at 17 under par, rounds of 68, 63, and 68 for the big-hitting American. A six-shot lead from the US Open winner Brooks Koepka, who is about six shots back massively going into round four tomorrow. He's back at 11 under par. Henrik Stenson, who does so well, so consistent, is at 10 under par, one shot behind Koepka. And tied for fourth, Brian Harman and England's Justin Rose at 9 under par. Notable other scores, Rafa Cabrera-Bello at 8 under par, Tyrell Hatton 7 under par, along with last year's winner of the DP World Championship, Matthew Fitzpatrick. He'll obviously be back defending that title in a couple of weeks' time at Jumeirah Golf. It's Tommy Fleetwood, winner of the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship in 2017. He's at 5 under par. Phil Mickelson, well, he isn't going so well. He's at 1 over par, with the Aussie Adam Scott also 2 over as well. So the leaderboard going in, it's a one-way runway at the moment. Dustin Johnson, big six-shot lead, 17 under par, six shots ahead of Brooks Koepka in second place.
DJ in control over in China. We'll have all the latest for you from that one.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.